Not every jeweler gets to display the Rolex crown. If you're considering investing in a Rolex, protect your investment by visiting an official Rolex jeweler. Only they can provide you with a Rolex warranty bearing the store's name. And this warranty is backed by the renowned Rolex Service Network.
Russell Corman, fine jewelry, diamonds, and watches. At the corner of 38th and Lamar, your official Rolex dealer and purveyor of fine jewelry and watches in Austin.
This week from Donington Park, me, Jonathan Green, sitting around having a round table conversation with some of the top men of World Superbikes and the world of motorcycle racing. We have my co-commentator, Steve Martin, the former World Endurance Champion and World Superbike rider. We have Leon Haslam, the current World Superbike rider from Great Britain, who's currently recovering from a broken leg he received in practice at Assen, but still hoping to ride at the Donington track. We have Dave Miller, the chief editor of Bike Sport News, one of the top publications in Great Britain. And we also have former Grand Prix star Jeremy McWilliams of Northern Ireland, who has been recently taking part in the Northwest at 49 years of age and is also currently team manager at River Motor and looking after one of the young Irish riders, Jack Kennedy. We started the roundtable conversation talking to Leon Haslam, who is recovering from a broken leg, and I wanted to find out how that recovery was going.
So let's kick it off with, I suppose, the man of the hour, really, Leon Haslam, because you've been through a big injury recently in practice at Assen and obviously missed Monza. Your status, if you like, going into the Donington weekend, will you be able to ride, do you think?
Yeah, in my own head, I'm going to ride. You know, I've got to kind of wait and see how good I'm going to be able to ride. And obviously, I've got to pass a medical, which will be Friday morning. But yeah, in my own head, we've been working hard since Assen, since the break, 3 weeks now. And, you know, that's been my main focus. It's been in my head that I want to come back here. You know, it's a circuit that I know. And, you know, for me, it's where I want to be.
You were telling me just earlier about your injury and how you're really pleased with the surgeon you've got. We've got Jeremy and Steve here, and Dave, I'm sure, as well, has probably had his fair share of accidents and injuries. But how much have we moved on, do you think? Because you've been riding long enough where you've probably seen quite a few different surgeons and different doctors along the way. How much advanced are we now?
I think what they can do now is incredible, and the hardest thing is finding them people that understand the sport, understand the person as in my case me, to do it in the best, safest way, but also to achieve the goals that I wanted to achieve. And from the moment of breaking my leg, I had it in my mind that I wanted to race inside 4 weeks, and to explain that to a lot of doctors, they kind of just laugh at you, and definitely it's 3 to 6 months, but getting the right guy and working sensibly and under a no promise sort of way of working, it can be achievable.
Well, I'm just wondering, opening it up a little bit, let me open one subject, because I want to say to Jeremy, congratulations, still running. TT, how was that experience?
Northwest, excuse me.
How was that? Because I know you regularly ride, and I know you do a few classic stuff, but this is pretty serious stuff.
I think 2650 Super Twin. It's not a it's not a super bike by any means. It's only a 4-lap race. It's actually quite easy. I think if the conditions go in your favour, and I know the bike. I've ridden the bike last year. I finished second to Ran Farquhar at the Northwest 200, and of course I wanted to get a win. Ryan wasn't there this year, Michael Rutter wasn't at full fitness, and I got a bit of competition from the local riders, but it worked out all right in the end. Wasn't ideal, we had a really great qualifying on Tuesday evening. It was real dry, and I was sort of hoping for that for the race, but win to win there, and then we got rained off on Saturday, which is a real disappointment. Two races, and two wins would have been even better than one, but I'm pretty pleased that I've, just dabbling, should we say, in racing, I can still manage to pull a win off there.
The crowd that listens to this is mostly probably going to be in Austin, Texas, I imagine. So they're used to looking at the new circuit down there. Just explain a little bit about what the Northwest 200 is. It's not exactly a racetrack, is it?
Well, it's a racetrack, but it's on the roads, yeah. It's a full you know, it's an open road race. It's a, or it's just a closed road race, which is you know, lampposts and curbs and you know, makeshift chicanes and, you know, riding around the roundabouts and stuff. It's a pretty simple racetrack to learn. You just got to stay out of trouble. You know, you've got to ride at 9/10 and not give it 100%. I think I can do that. You know, I feel I can do that when I turn up there. I'm not riding anywhere near the level that I've had to ride my whole career. So for me, it's quite a pleasant, you know, experience. Of course, it doesn't look like that. It looks pretty mad, and you know, anybody watching a road race for the first time, you wonder why they do it. But I've always wanted to take part in a road race, and that was the ideal opportunity because it's an easy one to learn. It's a 9-mile course, and it's at home, so I've got a home crowd. To win in front of a home crowd at a circuit I've been going to since I was 10 years of age was a bit of a dream come true, and totally out of the blue, because I never expected to go road racing whenever my career was finished.
What about you, Leon? We see Josh Brooks. He's got the bug and he's doing it. Can you ever see yourself doing something like that?
You know, the Northwest, the TT, they're events that I go to pretty much every year. We missed this year because of the injury, but you know, the fantastic events. It's definitely a different kettle of fish nowadays for the guys that do that compared to the track day guys, but it's something that you can never rule out. You know, it's big respect to the guys that do it, but you know, I do feel that the racing circuits and the roads is two different sports right now.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I'd like to open a subject up, maybe David, you can start on this one, but obviously last weekend at Le Mans, big weekend for Brits, and it's ironic that we've got some esteemed Brits here, and in fact some records were broken because Scott Redding winning his first race in Moto2, and of course Cal Crutchlow getting the best result he's had at MotoGP level. Your thoughts on that, and I'd like to hear the rest of the guys as well.
Well, I mean, it was a great weekend for Brits, and it was the first time a Brit had won at Le Mans for 30 years, since Alan Carter won in the rain, I think. And however long ago it was, you know, and Cal rode what I think is one of the best races of his life, because he stayed on and he just had enough left. You know, Marquez was coming at a second a lap or something, and he had enough tyre just to keep going. And you know, Scott again stayed on while all about him fell off, rode a really mature race, and you know, it was great to see all those Brits on the podium. And I think you know, Scott is in with with a 24-point lead in the championship. I know it's only round four or whatever it was, you know. But that's if he keeps riding the way he's riding, just keeps points. He's got a real chance of taking the title, which will be fantastic.
We have to look down the record books to see the last Brit that was out there, Jeremy.
It wasn't Le Mans, though. It was Assen way back in 2000. I can't even remember. It was 2001, I think. It's the last time. You know, Scott's taken that little, you know, record that I had for all those years away from me, but I'm really happy to see that Scott's done it, and I think Scott's one, you know, that I'd love to see in MotoGP. It's great that he's got the win in Moto2, but I think Scott's future's got to be in MotoGP.
How much harder is that transition, do you think?
Well, it wasn't very difficult for Marquez, was it?
No.
And riders like that, you know, riders who are very special, make the transition to any bike. And I think, you know, Scott's the sort of guy that could do that. Of course, he needs the opportunity to do it. He needs to do it on a good bike. Whether he gets the opportunity to do it on a bike like a factory bike like Marquez, that remains to be seen. And it's dead easy to take the opportunities that are handed to you just to get into MotoGP. I hope he doesn't do that either. You know, take a CRT ride just to get on a MotoGP bike. When he makes that move, I'm sure he knows that, you know, it's going to be the right move.
Well, there might be a situation next year where Mark VDS have got the money to lease a Yamaha engine or to get one of the RC.
Well, that would be excellent.
Production bikes.
Love to see that.
How impressed are you when you see, obviously you've been at that level as well, but when you see someone like Cal coming through, and obviously Scott now, you know, and you're riding on the other side, if you like, on the world in World Superbikes, I mean, does Cal's ride impress you as much, or is it what you would expect from somebody who's been your equal many a time?
Yeah, you know, I've raced Cal my whole career. You know, when he was with Factory Yamaha in World Superbike, I was teammates with him in BSB, and you know, he's obviously a top rider, you know, World Supersport champion, and it's fantastic to see how well he's doing in that class. And you know, for me, when he made the move, I thought it was quite risky, purely because unless you're on a Repsol or a Fiat Yamaha, you're not going to finish in the top four. And with the rules changing to 1,000, it obviously helped him a lot because everyone kind of leveled out again and he stepped up to the mark. You know, he can't do any more than he's doing. Frustrating because I think he's riding as good as anyone and he probably deserves one of them four factory rides, but I can't see that happening in the next few years.
He's talked a lot about desperately wanting a factory ride, and you know, at the moment there might be a factory Ducati if Hayden doesn't re-sign, or there might be a Suzuki. Would it be a step back for him to leave where he is now and go to a Ducati that isn't capable of winning races, or an unproven Suzuki?
Yeah, I think so. In results, I think that the bikes that are available on that grid, if you take the two Repsols and Yamahas out, he's on the next best bike, in my opinion.
Here's one for all you then. Valentino Rossi, is he back, or is he lucky to be making up the numbers?
No, Valentino, you know, is a class act. You know, he's a hero of mine, and you know, I've been lucky enough to race against him. And what you've got to understand is that, you know, the year that he left Yamaha, he had a real serious injury, probably the first in his career. Definitely took a big confidence knock. Still was capable of winning after he broke his leg, which he proved, you know, when he come back in Malaysia. And then since then, he had a tough 2 years at Ducati. Definitely confident knocking. Since then, your Marquez's, your Lorenzo's have come on board and progressed even more. The Honda's improved even more. And he's kind of gone back to what he had 3 years ago. And everyone's kind of moved on. And he's got to regain his confidence, find where he's at. He's only a few tenths off, but, you know, when he was winning, he did have that confidence and role as such that I think you need at that sort of level.
But riders like Marquez coming into it, you know, aren't riders like Rossi. You know, Rossi's that traditional type MotoGP rider, and you get new riders like Casey started, you know, breaking the mould, and now Marquez is even stepped that mark up again. I don't really see riders like Valentino being able to beat Marquez in the future now. It's a whole new level. And you know, even riders like Cal, you know, Cal's more traditional type rider too. I'd love to see Valentino stepping out of it, Cal getting that ride, which, you know, we know probably won't happen, but you know, riders like Marquez, I don't know whether they're going to be beaten in the future. If he keeps on doing what he's doing without injury, he's just going to, you know, completely annihilate the opposition.
I mean, a rider like Marquez reminds me of Rossi pretty much at the start. You know, like, yeah. Rossi was like that. Rossi was like, win it or bin it at the start. Yeah. And
I think that's a young thing more than anything else.
It's young and hungry, and yeah, as you get older, you do lose a little bit of that hunger. And even in the back of your head, you think a little bit about, you know, like, I mean, you're still fast, but you have to admit that you're not as fast as you were, you know, 10 years ago.
You got riders at 10 tenths and you got riders at 11 tenths.
Exactly.
Marquez is 11 tenths.
Exactly. Maybe 12 tenths.
Yeah. You even look at this year, though, you know, Ross's way is, you know, calm, calculated approach that he's got now.
Yeah.
Got him to beat Marquez in Qatar. Marquez's way got him to finish second against Lorenzo and Areth.
Yeah, I mean,
there's two different approaches that you've got to look at it.
I mean, I look at Biaggi last year. I mean, how many races did he win last year?
Not that many.
One or two, but he still won the championship, and he won it by using every bit of experience he had, not the speed of the bike. You know, like, the speed of the bike was greater probably than what he had last year, but I mean, he was 40 years old, and he got to the end by being consistent.
But you know, it's interesting. I mean, I agree. Marquez is definitely the guy of the moment, and everybody's talking about him being the next big thing. But like you say, you talk about Cal being teammates with him. You know, suddenly they go from being a great Moto2 rider, and now everybody's talking about Paul Espargaro because he was up against Marquez. So obviously he's the next big thing. Is it a bit too of a fad thing that? Because surely, right bike, Honda, young, fast rider who's willing to take risks, or is he something brilliant? I mean, what I'm saying is, can we actually judge it that way?
I always look at the old saying, and it works to a lot of things. You know, you look at people who've made the move, like Lorenzo, Casey Stoner, now Marquez, and Pedrosa. Anyone that's done the move from your 250 to MotoGP, they've always been fast. They've been fast guys. No matter what they're on, they've been fast. And the one person that's impressed me the most out of all of them is actually Lorenzo. You know, he was probably exactly like Marquez, had the most horrendous, biggest crashes, and then he realised, you know, that, you know, I need to stop this, it's going to hurt, and then he becomes such a better rider for that. And, you know, he's the most consistent guy out there. You know, every lap is within a tenth, and that for me is more impressive than someone that's doing it off pure aggression. And you know, Marquez is averaging 2 crashes a weekend, and you can't get away with that for too much longer. And hopefully he'll come through that and become consistent and a Lorenzo, in my opinion.
Marquez does look like he's he's looking for somewhere to fall off,
but which is great. You know, it's great to see, to have someone have that fire, that passion. But being on the other side of it, knowing that it can hurt, you've got to sort that out and smoothen it out.
At least when he stops crashing, it'll still be fast.
Exactly. Yeah, hopefully, yeah, as long as it don't knock his confidence. And, you know, it can go both ways. But I think he's that fast and aggressive at the minute, he's only going to get better.
I want to just, another subject to talk about is, you know, as long as I've been covering motorcycle racing, everybody's talked about the golden era of British racing, when Barry Sheen was racing, when Ron Haslam was racing. And of course, you know, when you were at the height of your powers, everybody said this is a new resurgence and all the rest of it. And yet I look at this year and say, I don't think we've had a more golden patch of British talent ever. World Superbikes, you look at the amount of British riders, Supersport being led by a Brit. Then you look at MotoGP, look what Callum and Scott achieved this weekend. And then you look at the talent that seemingly is coming through, in my opinion, and I'd like to throw it out, I think this is the golden age right now.
It sort of takes waves, you know. We get lulls and peaks, and we're peaking again at the moment. You know, and Irish riders, you forgot about.
Yes, sorry.
But
of course.
And Jack Kennedy, of course, who's sitting with us.
Of course. I was going to bring that up in a minute.
But I think, you know, you're right. It's a purple patch of great talent at the moment, and which is super. You know, as long as we maintain that, and you know, they don't fall away or lose their rides or injuries, pick injuries or whatever that might be, to get them into the level of the Spanish riders, though, because the Spanish riders are holding all the, you know, the cards in MotoGP, you know, except for Scott in Moto2, Cal dipping in and out into the top, you know, top two in Le Mans. How do we maintain that? I don't know how long that stays without getting full factory rides, full Repsol supported, as Liam said, you know, Fiat Yamaha supported rides in MotoGP, and there ain't any. And even if they bring along these so-called, you know, lease bikes, those lease bikes aren't going around the front.
Yeah, the question is, what could Cal Crutchlow possibly do to get on one of them factory rides next year? And if he won every single race, he's not going to be on one of them bikes next year, because they're both signed up for two. All four riders are signed up for 2 years. So, and in my opinion, he can't do any more. And I just hope he can continue that without trying too hard and crashing.
I'm going to say, all he can do is perhaps maybe be detrimental by crashing.
Exactly, and he's not at the minute. And he's, like I say, he cannot do any more. So, you know, in my opinion, just carry on doing what you're doing, and hopefully it'll turn around and he'll get what he deserves.
When you look at those two bikes on track, the factory Yamaha and the satellite Yamaha, what do you see that's different?
Honestly, it's not a big difference in my opinion. You look at the speed traps from a Reth, Cal and Bradley top the sheets every session. So I don't think there's a massive difference, but as you know, Steve and Jeremy, it's not about the material, it's about everything. It's having the factory, the team and the crew. Yeah. You know, everything, you know, where you go testing, where you know, the factory team went testing in Texas, Cal's didn't.
Yeah.
That could be the deciding factor. And it's all the little things that make that little bit of a result. And if you look at Cal's times, he is only a few tenths off. And a little bit better crew, a little bit better team, or just having the factory a little bit better, the latest things a weekend earlier than the next guy, might be the difference.
This wave of British riders that came, that's coming through now, and there's a lot of them, they're all about 26 or 27. Do you think there's something special, or somebody changed their idea 15 years ago to change the fact that there wasn't any people coming through? Or do you think, you know, like that was around the era where Barry Sheen and you know, and Ron Haslam and all those guys were doing their thing?
Yeah.
So do you think that something happened back then to bring on this
baby boom?
Yeah, like a baby boom of riders or something like that. I mean, Australia had one, but we've finished our boom now, you know what I mean? Like, ours was like production racing. Just about anybody could get a bike and race it. You know, you didn't have to have money to do it. And now when you race in Australia, unless you've got like a massive bank account, you can't do it.
Unfortunately, that's the way it's gone, isn't it? I mean, you know, we're going through that at the moment. Trying to find sponsors is nigh on impossible. And, you know, those teams like Scott's are few and far between. Having that Mark VDS support behind them is paramount to his success. You know, riders, there's many pretty talented riders that are never going to step into that because they're not finding the support. And, you know, teams are failing to find this support that they need to bring those riders on. I think that's particularly the bad at the moment is that you know we're going through that really. You know, we all say you know that the economic you know disaster as it is at the moment, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's particularly bad in motorcycles racing or sports in general because it's the first thing that gets hit, you know. And I don't know, you know, where all this talent is going to go in the future. You've got the talent right there at the moment, but what about all the talent coming through? You know, where are they going to step into? Who's going to pick them up? Who's going to bring them into world level? You know, because British Championship, you know, rather like Tommy Hill sitting on the sidelines right now with no options. It's really a bad time. I don't know how you change that. Never, you know, okay, we've got it at the moment, but what's going to happen in 2 years' time?
What's the thing? I mean, I'm just about to embark on getting involved in AMA, which I've always had a sort of love-hate relationship because, you know, obviously there's been some fantastic riders come out of the AMA, you know, from Schwantz to Edwards to whatever. Same out of the Australian Championship. But when they go through not a highlighted zone in their media, i.e. it's not, you know, like the Daytona is a good example, 200. The Daytona used to be this massive event, which it just clearly isn't as much at the moment. The Australian Superbikes used to have a higher profile than it perhaps does now. And I think that's part of this scene too, which is if, you know, you're Jamie Stauffer and the Australian Superbikes is shown all around the world, or you're Tommy Hill, for example, or, you know, Alex Lowe's, and it's getting a lot of TV, then I think the notoriety, I don't know if you'd agree with it, is part of it, is where the TV and the media is with it.
Watching Leon coming up though, Leon was coming through from supported rides here in BSB and his talent was enough to get him a step onto the world stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
and there wasn't the TV back then.
No, and that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, it was the case in Australia as well. Like, if you won the Australian Championship up until 2000, that was a guarantee you'd go somewhere else. You would get a pickup in, you know, like, and the Japanese also had a lot more of a presence in Australia. Like, they cared what happened in Australia. If you won in Australia, you'd get a factory Suzuka 8-hour ride. But, you know, stuff like that doesn't happen anymore.
It seems to be the Australian Championship's at its weakest it's ever been, too, when I was over. Speaking with the guys there, you know, there's three or four riders at the front, but they don't have any options.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, they're very fast, the guys at the front. You saw that, how fast they were at World Superbikes down there, but there's nowhere to go, there's no money in it, and it's very difficult for them.
The hardest thing, I think, is moving on from the domestic championship. You know, I was in England, in my opinion, 2 years too long. I was promised rides to go to World Championship. It didn't work out, and even if you win races in the British Championship, it's not necessarily going to get a ride in World Superbike or definitely anywhere else that's going to be competitive. And that transfer, in my opinion, is the hardest one. You know, if Alex Lowe's wins the championship this year, what ride could he possibly get in World Superbike? You know, not one that's going to win, you know, because, you know, not with the amount of people that's already here. And that, for me, is the hardest step. And vice versa, if we win the World Superbike championship, what would be available in MotoGP? You know, nothing that's going to get you in the top five or six.
Riders are also clinging on to their rides much more now. Yeah. You know, they're not, you know, making themselves, you know, knowing that they're shopping around or they're looking around because the options aren't there. So they're having to stay with teams longer, you know, keep their nose clean and probably having to ride, you know, even harder and put together better championships just to keep their position on the team.
As a rider, you always want to ride like a super bike. Where you can change everything, have different ECUs, MotoGP bike, you want to have the best, worth millions of dollars. But, I mean, is there a time where we need to, like, lower the level of everything so that instead of paying $200,000 for a bike, the bike costs $50,000, but people get paid $50,000? Or, you know, as an example, to get more people involved in the sport and give more people direction, get more television coverage, to get more sponsorship.
We were told by May that we would see cost saving measures taken in World Superbike. We were told that at the Geneva meeting back in 2012, but I haven't seen anything yet. But that has to happen, you know.
Mm. I'm a believer that they need to make serious savings because gone are the days we had cigarette sponsorship and all that big sponsorship, and then we've kept the level of the bike and everything the same. But the money has disappeared, so we've kept on going, and now nobody's got, you know, all the small teams that keep this paddock alive are really running out of money now.
Yeah.
And they've got absolutely no chance of winning. Back in the day when, in Australia, with production racing, I'm not saying that we should go production racing, I'm just using this as an example. The guy in last place really did almost have the same bike as the guy in the first place. The same guys always still win, but every now and then you'd get a guy come through because they did have a bike that could win. The same thing in MotoGP, we said it before, unless you've got one of those four bikes, it doesn't matter how good you are, you're never going to get on the podium, even if it's wet.
In World Superbike, I feel that's changed a lot in the last 3 years. 2009 was my first full year in World Superbike, and for Donington, this very race, I got one of my dad's race school engines, bog standard Fireblade, had it tuned in Louth by Chris Mayu, bolted it in a bog standard chassis, put the electronics on that we'd had all the whole year, and we finished second to Spies. You know, there's no way you could do that now. You know, since then, with Aprilia and BMW, and now Kawasaki come back in with factory support, the amount of money they spend with electronics and research, and each electronic unit needs at least 5 staff to control it. And you know, I had 2 years with BMW of the results purely determined on what the computer guy did to you. It's for me, it headed the wrong way, especially for World Superbike. I think that all needs to be simpler.
But that's why BSB is so good right now. You know, to include the BSB riders, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, dude, but you want to bring BSB riders into world level. World level has got to be BSB. Yeah. BSB racing skill is as good as it's ever been. And they've just put control ECUs on board, cost saving measures that have worked. The racing's still perfect. But if we want those riders doing what Shiggy Byrne was doing back in Brands Hatch, you know, 6 years ago, whatever it was.
John Reynolds before that.
All the wildcards, when we had, we had wildcards here, Tom, everybody, there was a chance that the wildcards could go in. Stump all over the world, guys, and just
Laguna Seca with the Bostroms back then.
We're just talking about right here is part of the massive, massive problem, at least with superbikes in the world at the moment, is the fact that everywhere you go, there's a different superbike nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the old days, everyone had FIM superbikes. So you go to Australia, the guys have been riding those FIM superbikes all year long. They can actually come and have a go at winning. But right now, everywhere you go in the world, there's not the wild cards that there used to be.
But that's Dorna's target, is to bring it all into line.
Yeah,
you know, that's what they wanted. That's what they want to do. I don't know whether they can force the factories into it, because that's what they're going to have to do with factories that are here already in World Superbike. But they're going to have to force the factories into taking their bikes back a step, so that.
What's your, off the top of your head, not going to hold you to it, but what do you think would be a good step that would?
Well, it has to be control ECU. We all were very skeptical of that at the beginning, but it has to be control ECU that is the same level as it is at BSB, or BSB can't play card in it.
Hello.
BSB can't take part. You know, other championships won't come in because they see it as a too expensive. We see such huge differences in teams. Teams that have got money and got testing budgets, you know, have, as Leon explained, got a huge staff to run electronics. There are differences in those teams and the teams in the middle pack. So it can only be control ECU. I don't know. Can you think of?
Well, I mean, if do you want to say, right, well, we like this BSB model. We've got all the specs. Blah blah. We're going to introduce a spec ECU made by someone, be it Motec, be it Morelli, be it whoever. Will Honda go, well, we don't like this? And if they are going to bring in this new V4 next year, are they going to bring it into this paddock and put a spec ECU on it and not have it as this whiz bang almost MotoGP bike to win in World Superbikes, and bring it in and just put a spec ECU and it being?
I think the problem
not
is
a full superbike.
They've spent that much money developing it all. It's like going to be a big waste if they just say get rid of it, another standard one. And on top of that, you know, a spec ECU in England suits the Honda, suits the Kawasaki.
Doesn't
suit the Ducati at all. You know, so you've just kind of done Ducati as a company a massive disjustice in results and everything, because the spec that they've given doesn't work with that configuration of bike.
But hang on, is the Ducati doing any good anywhere at the moment?
It seems to be winning Superstock.
Okay, forget Superstock, but Superbike I'm talking about.
Well, that's
a new bike.
Superstock. I don't know.
But if you make the rules Superstock in World Superbikes, that,
then it can be competitive.
But will that alienate the manufacturers even more, or bring them in? I don't know.
I don't think it'll do anything. You know, it'll just. Of course, manufacturers can make their Superstock bikes competitive if that's what they want to do.
But isn't
the,
I mean,
the Ducati Superstock bike was actually quicker than Carlos's full factory bike in Aragon down the street.
Yeah. But aren't Dorna now in a unique position that's never really occurred before, which is they're now basically overseeing both championships. So should their focus be on bolstering MotoGP, which is something they've been trying to do for a while? They tried CRT. None of us think it really worked that well. But should it be a 25 to 30 rider field? And certainly there's the talent there, whether it be from here or whether it be from Moto2 or whatever. Then look at World Superbike and keep that at a level, you know, that is secondary perhaps to MotoGP, but still a strong championship, because they've got two revenue streams there, two big championships. Is there any, you know, I don't know, what is the ladder now? What is the new model for motorcycle racing?
Well, I mean, that's something they've got to work out, because, you know, they want the biggest grids they can get for both championships. But, you know, if they don't have to keep Honda happy in MotoGP first, I think, and I'm just taking Honda as an example. Mm. They have to keep Honda happy in MotoGP first, and then World Superbike second, I would think. So if Honda, who have the MSMA, and they said, well, this is what we're going to do, and Honda said, well, actually, we might pull out World Superbike if you're going to do that, and there might be a whole big jigsaw of little rule changes here and there that affect both championships.
But in World Superbike, the only actual full factory teams now, full factory supported teams now, is BMW and Kawasaki and Aprilia.
But Nagamoto's just been quoted as saying that, you know, maybe two championships is too much. Mm. He was interviewed in GP1, and
but Honda haven't been in World Superbikes for about 10 years.
Yeah, but he's quoted as saying, well, you know, Yamaha aren't there, we're not there, maybe two championships is too much. But if the championships were made, I suppose, more accessible for factories to come in without this huge expense, then they would be there, right?
Yeah.
But that's interesting, saying there's too much to have two championships, because you've got a bunch of money and a bunch of riders with the talent enough to ride it at the world level. That doesn't seem to make an economic sense to have, just to lay all those people off, just because. I mean, yeah, what are those? I mean, you know, I mean, that's happened in four wheel motorsport. You've got Formula One at the highest level, but then you've got GP2, GP3, Formula 3, Renault, and many other series, and DTM, and then again to touring cars and so on and so forth. But there's a lot for those 600 drivers, let's say. There's a lot of options for them. Whereas in motorcycle racing, there isn't as many options, it seems. So to shut down a championship, no, I can see one way of doing it.
It doesn't make sense, does it? But because, particularly with how good a quality World Superbike Championship is right now.
But, and there's revenue streams coming.
But you've got to try and include every manufacturer. You know, Ducati and Aprilia are pouring everything into it. They've got their own test teams. They seem to have a never-ending budget to race here, and Ducati are racing also in MotoGP. But that doesn't fit the bill for other manufacturers. So there's only one way you're going to bring them in. I don't think the racing will get any different, but it'll be as good as it is right now, or as good as BSB is right now. Mm. But they've got to come up with a very clever plan to entice them back in.
All right, let's turn to World Superbikes. That's what we're here this weekend at Donington. From your point of view, first of all, Leon, obviously you'll be back in the fray, and hopefully fully fit, you'll be able to fight for podiums and wins again. But what an interesting year we've got. I'm sure now you've sort of had a race off to watch it yourself, and probably watched Monza the way I did, which is, wow, this is close. It is an exciting year, and having been a part of it for as long as you have, do you see the excitement that we as sort of outsiders get from the amount of riders now capable of winning?
Yeah, you know, for sure. You know, over the last few years, it's you've seen the progression of the BMW get stronger and stronger. You know, it was a winning bike last year. Now they've refined that, and both Chaz and Marco are running at the front. Kawasaki last year come in super strong, and, you know, Tom's doing a fantastic job again, so the Kawasaki's capable. And, you know, you look at Aprilia, they've always been the bike to beat. You know, they've got two riders, 1-2 in the championship. So, you know, they're always the big target. Jonathan proved in Assen that the Honda's still capable. The only one that's kind of made a step back with the new model is Ducati, but, you know, it's a very, very tough championship to bring a total new concept into it, and, you know, I'm pretty confident they'll get there, but, you know, maybe not this year.
And there might be some more surprises, I don't know if you agree, but, you know, someone like Chaz might just come out of the woodwork and start putting more wins down than he's already done.
Well, but, I mean, at Aragon, he was unstoppable.
Mm. Unbelievable, yeah.
Unstoppable, and I was very, you know, Chaz has always been a really very, very good rider, and it's because he was into EV, and he went to America. He slid under pretty much everybody's radar in the UK, then popped up in the Super Bowl. Oh, who's this Jazz Davis Welsh chap? And you know, his display in Aragon was fantastic. And I think Monza was difficult because he bent his bike in half at Lesmo, and he's had a couple of setbacks. But you know, it's something that guys like Chaz, who aren't really well known by the kind of the British public, and that they can come here now and they can see him and they can add him to the list of people they want to cheer on. Mm. Whereas with Leon's been around for 5-10 years.
Nobody wants to cheer him on.
What about the Irish boys? I mean, you've got Johnny Ray and obviously Eugene. And in my opinion, watching Eugene at Monza, I saw a different side of Eugene that I hadn't seen before in terms of the aggressive way he was fighting. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
I saw that starting, his determination, you know, even when he's been beat by Tom by quite a way, when he comes back, and you can see his body language change. To me, you know, he's one of the most spectacular riders to watch right now. Yeah, okay, there's this huge expectation on his shoulders, you know, being the number one, a pretty rider stepping into Max's shoes, and I'm sure he feels that, but...
It's interesting you say that. Do you feel that he is the number one? Yeah, Wintoli might argue with that.
No, I think when you've been there, of course, you always assume you're number one. Whenever you keep your place and something new comes on, you assume you're number one. And I don't think, there's no secrets in that. I think that Eugene is number one. And he's expected to perform and he's expected to win championships. But you can see in his demeanour that he really puts everything into it. Whenever he's on the back foot, he comes back stronger. Something that you don't normally see riders doing from one race to the other. Normally, when they lay the cards on the table in the first race, it's going to be there or thereabouts in the second race, but he makes a deficit up of 10 or 12 seconds or something and beats him. And at Assen, that was the second race at Assen. I honestly can't say that there's any more spectacular championship in the world right now than watching World Superbike.
Hmm. Any other thoughts?
Well, I have to agree with Jeremy. I mean, as a commentator, I mean, people always say, who's going to win? And, I mean, it's just too hard to say. I mean, it could be any one of 5, 6, 7 guys that could win. It's completely different to other sports. We were in the US just last week watching the V8 supercars, and, I mean, there, it's very close racing, a lot of control components on the cars, but still, you sort of knew who was going to win. MotoGP, you sort of know he's going to win, but honestly, in this championship, you'd think you'd be able to pin it down race to race, but I mean, it's very rare that we even get a double nowadays. I'm like, yeah, we had Chaz Davis, but other than that, I mean, like, look at what, as you said, after Assen race one, we were all like, well, you know, it's going to be pretty hard to, you know, it was 8 seconds, yeah, that he won by. Yeah. It's pretty going to be pretty hard to turn that around. And then when race two came around, I thought, well, you know, Tom's dropped off the pace. But then actually, when you look at the times, it's somehow that Aprilia with Eugene found a second a lap.
Yeah, it was the same race time, yeah. Or around about the same race time. Yeah. He made the difference up.
Yeah, which goes again, like the brilliant thing about this championship is actually the racing. It's everything else that they need to work on, the promotion and all that, in my opinion.
All right, well, this has been a really interesting chat, but I just want to finally, if we can, finish with Supersport. And maybe, again, I open it up to Leon, because I'm looking at Sam Lowe's and I'm looking at Donington, because it's a position that I think you have probably pretty much carried the weight on your shoulders, and Jeremy, you know, you too as well, of the British fans' expectancy. Now, okay, World Superbikes aside, Sam Lowe is leading the World Championship in Supersport. He is a charismatic character. He will, I think, have the world on his shoulders, and he's got an unbelievable adversary in 3-time winner of this Supersport Championship in Kenan Sofoglu. Do you see the parallel I'm talking about, or do you think that Sam's just a completely different character to yourself? I mean, going into something like this.
No, you know, Sam wears his heart on his sleeve. You know, he is riding fantastically right now. You know, for the last 2 years, he's put a lot of hard work in, off the track, in the gym, and training, basically dedicating everything to what he's doing. And you know, he's moved this year to the Yamaha team, and you know, in my opinion, he hasn't put a foot wrong. You know, last year a lot of people said he tried too hard and crashed it when he shouldn't have crashed. But you know, this year, bad tyre in Australia, but still got a second when no one else had that problem with the tyre. You know, in the top three anyway, at least. should have won Aragon, but the engine expired on the last lap when, you know, it should have been a gearbox problem. They had the whole race, which not many people knew. And then the Assen win and the Monza win, for me, is the best two rides of his whole career.
Oh, yeah, I agree with Leon. It's, you know, he really grew up, I think, towards the middle to the end of last year. And, you know, this year, he's got the measure. I believe he's got the measure of Sofwagel. I really do. And I think, you know, at Aragon, Sofwagel made some mistakes, some big mistakes.
And at Monza.
So I think he's not a dead cert to win it, but, you know, he has got a hell of a good chance.
But Steve, we've said it many times before, you don't count out Sofwagel too quickly, though, do you?
Well, don't count out Sofwagel. If I can see a weakness in Sam, it's the fact that he has to do the fastest lap at every point in time. He doesn't use his, you know, like, let's talk about Sofwagel for a second. Sofwagel is a guy that if you show him that you can do 1:30, which is 1 second a lap quicker than he can go, he'll work until he can do 1:30. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes to win championships and that, you just have to hold a bit in reserve. And I don't think Sam at the moment, I agree with everything you said. Like, the race at Monza was like, the way he won that race was one of the best races I've ever seen, because you could see, you know, his bike wasn't as fast as the other guys. He came through, used his head in the race. But if he could improve on something, it would be like just not showing his hand quite so much in qualifying, I would say.
But I think Sofoglu's turned him into that, though, because Sofoglu plays the mind game. You know, he goes out and he puts in one lap after another, continually those race runs. You know, we're running Jack Kennedy. You know, when even riders like Jack, they look at it, they're blown away by the consistency of riders doing that, because it's pretty difficult. We know he's just doing it on a pretty standard tire, a race tire. And he goes out and he's doing this for a reason. He's doing this to try to break the opposition down. He does very well at it. And the reason why Sam, I think, responds the way he does is because he's trying to put one back over on Sofwagel. So he goes out and puts the fastest lap in. What he did in Monza was pretty spectacular on the last lap when there was drops of raindrop, you know, coming down.
Big qualifying, yeah.
Nobody saw that on TV. You couldn't see it coming down, but, you know, we did, and our riders are sitting in the garage going, oh, it's raining out there, and Sam goes quicker.
Yeah.
That was probably the strongest showing of his personality I've ever seen, and I think that's him stamping his authority down, saying, I'm not standing for this any longer. You know, this is my territory now.
The actual full story of that, he told me afterwards, I was watching live timing at home. he started his first lap of his tyre, and through Ascari, Keenan was cruising.
He got held up.
And he was half a second up on the fastest lap. He had to back off because Keenan was in the way. Keenan pulled in the pits and he went for another lap when it was raining even harder, and then went another 0.4 quicker.
I mean, I was walking up and down pit lane at that point, and riders, like you say, were coming into every box saying, oh, it's raining too hard, oh, I'm slipping, I'm sliding everywhere. And then I saw him heading out, and I was just like shaking my head from the information that I heard.
I've never seen it, but I think that's a sign of his feeling for the bike and feedback to the tire.
Yeah.
You know, you don't do it just completely blind, you do it with feeling from the tire, and he's riding it, getting the feel, thinking, actually, this is not too bad, because it's been so warm in Monza, the water was evaporating virtually as soon as it touched the ground. Of course it's falling on your visor, but he's been around too long to know what the condition is. You know, it wasn't a cold day, it was a really hot day, so he was still getting the grip. But yeah, his last two races, as Leon said, have definitely shown his determination, to say the least.
I love the fact you brought up Jack as well, because you've got people like who perhaps we weren't expecting to come as quickly into this championship and make their mark. One is Jack Kennedy, and the other is Florin Marino, who's come in for an injured David Salom. And as we saw at Monza, you know, the guy is more than capable. He had that a few rides for the India team last year, but there's other guys that are capable of getting podiums.
Well, you know, riders even that were pushing Sam in that race, you know, Marino and Rosso, and, you know, riders that you don't hear of, but they've been there or thereabouts. They've been in the sidelines and they've got the experience, and they're now on really, really good machinery. You know, I'd say it's a top of year as any of the as it could have ever be for Jack Kennedy to come into this championship. But he's come in and, you know, he's shown that he's got unbelievable speed on a bike, you know, which was a decent bike. We haven't been able to take it to the step that some of the other bikes are at the moment, but it's not that far away. And Jack's running in the top four, top five on circuits he's never been before. So I think there's great things to come there, you know, and not putting any pressure on him. He's at Donington Park now. You'll probably see the real Jack Kennedy step up right now. But it's an incredible championship, and it's one that really that I think is it the most spectacular. Is it as easily as spectacular to watch as any other race on the day?
All right, we'll finish it off with a really mean thing to do, but come on, let's do it anyway. World champion in Super Sport and Superbike, Jeremy McWilliams.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with my heart. Obviously, I'm going to say the same thing as Leon. I'm going to say Sam Lowes for world champion, and you know, Eugene in World Superbike.
Exactly the same. Sam and Eugene for me.
And same here.
Ooh.
Same for me, actually. Sorry.
All right, now I'll go with Sam Lowes, but I've got to throw one. I'll go with Tom Sykes.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, that's a good call, actually. It's going to be between Eugene and Tom.
Depends if they give him his third place or not.
This is weird, isn't it?
And on that bombshell, thanks for talking to us, everybody, and I appreciate your time, and best of luck getting back to fitness, Leon Haslam.
Thank you.
Check out Horsepower Farm, Austin's number one motorcycle service, repair and restoration shop. If you're looking for an expert team to take care of your motorcycle, put over 90 years of experience to work for you. No matter what you ride, Horsepower Farm solve problems other shops just talk about. Horsepower Farm sells what they service as well. Stop in and see the unique selection of motorcycles from around the world. Only at Horsepower Farm, 1623 South Lamar Boulevard, or on the web at horsepower-farm.com. Home of Austin's only AMA pro racing team.